Welcome to the Purpose Unlocked podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Jennifer Winstall.
And I'm Leslie Kinchlow.
We're with the Winstall Kinchlow team in Charlotte, North Carolina. You can reach us at jennifer.winstall@ubs.com. We are financial advisors with UBS, one of the largest wealth managers in the world.
We are so excited to have meaningful conversations with a variety of guests. We'll be exploring their passions in business, entrepreneurship, and philanthropy.
Our mission is to bring purpose to life beyond the numbers. Welcome, Claire, to the Purpose Unlocked podcast. We're thrilled to have you join us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So today we're talking about divorce, which is a tricky subject. But what we want to get into is kind of how do we, and I love your website because your website says something I think that is so poignant and beautiful, a becoming divorce, a holistic approach to divorce that allows you to reorganize, restructure, and redefine your family with dignity and grace. I love that.
Thank you.
So today's topic, and we're going to do this as a series, so we appreciate your willingness to be our guest in this three-part series.
Absolutely. Yes. Thanks.
And today is legal and financial literacy.
Yes.
So a lot to cover in this area, but I think it'd help our listeners to understand a little about your background.
Sure.
And your practice, and then we'll jump right in.
Okay, sure. Thanks. Thanks again for having me. Yes, so I've been practicing family law now in Charlotte since 2007. Before I opened my own firm 5 years ago, I was at a large firm doing a lot of complex litigation, high conflict litigation. And when I decided to open my own firm 5 years ago, the purpose behind that was really on trying to help clients really with the education piece and the tools to understand all the different options that are available to them when selecting how they want to move forward in their divorce. Because I think that there's a lot of misinformation out there, or a lot of people, you know, remember their parents' divorce or a friend's divorce, and it doesn't have to be this horrific battleground that we're all pretty familiar with from the movies, or like I said, our parents, or something like that.
Well, I appreciate that, because when Leslie and I were talking about how to approach this podcast, what we recognize is this doesn't affect everyone, but it probably affects somebody's family member, neighbor, friend. So the information we're talking about can help people in our lives, whether it directly impacts us, we know it impacts those around us.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I appreciate your willingness to be an educator today.
Sure.
And we'll jump right in.
Great.
Okay.
Perfect.
So again, sticking with the legal literacy, I should say, let's start with the difference between mediation, litigation, and I love how you said everything in between.
Sure. Yeah. So you have your traditional adversarial process, a litigation format where, you know, both parties go hire lawyers or go it alone, but they come out of the gate filing a lawsuit. And then before you know it, you're entangled in the legal process trying to navigate that. And it's a very adversarial system. It's not a system that, you know, in all honesty, was designed to resolve family conflict. It was designed to help businesses part ways or resolve commercial disputes. And what we found is that there are other ways, there are better ways to help families resolve these disputes outside of a system that really wasn't designed for that purpose. In a traditional litigation situation, I mean, you are using adversarial tactics that pit people against each other, focus on the past, focused on who's at fault, focus on finding a winner and a loser. And so in a process that's designed that way, you have, that is the point of the game, is to, you know, showmanship and gamesmanship and play games and, you know, trying to outmaneuver the other side. But it's very taxing on families, both from a financial and an emotional standpoint. mediation, on the other hand, a lot of people participate in mediation, whether they've filed a lawsuit or not filed a lawsuit. Mediation is another form of alternative dispute resolution where people can work with attorneys and also engage a mediator who is a neutral, really a facilitator of sorts. And that mediator's goal is to help the parties come together and find a resolution. The difference there is they're not providing legal advice. A mediator is not providing legal advice. A mediator is not making any decisions. It's really the parties working with the help of their legal counsel to hopefully reach a resolution outside of the court process.
So do you have recommendations on how somebody would find a lawyer or a mediator? Like, what is that first or second step they would take?
Sure. I mean, I definitely think speaking to, if you feel comfortable, if you have a trusted person that you can speak to, I mean, most of us know someone who has gone through a divorce. Mm-hmm. You're going to be spending a lot of time with your lawyer. It's really important that you have a level of trust and good communication. And you can go and schedule consultations with one or two lawyers to see who might be a good fit. But speaking to friends or neighbors or someone that you trust to see who they've worked with is always, I think, an excellent resource. I happen to be a member of the Charlotte Collaborative Divorce Professionals Network, and we have a website, and that website, and I know we'll talk about collaborative divorce as a process, but that website has a list of collaborative attorneys, child specialists, collaborative divorce coaches, collaborative divorce. That website has a list of collaboratively trained professionals, and that's also a really great resource to be able to go and find a list of attorneys who could help you through that process.
Perfect. Is there such thing as a do-it-yourself divorce? Does that exist?
It does exist. You know, there's actually, I mean, there are people who can sit down at their kitchen table and figure things out, and not everything has to be so complex. There are websites you can go to now and do DIY stuff. Yeah. I caution people because just like anything else, you can find a DIY solution for just about anything nowadays, or ChatGPT or AI or something. Those can seem like a great idea and an inexpensive way to approach the process, but I have seen on more than one occasion, it turn into an expensive fix down the road.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because there will be something that you didn't think of, or something that wasn't addressed, but you might have signed something that closes doors on options that would have otherwise been available to you. So, you know, certainly if you have the ability to have a conversation with your spouse and to at least figure some things out, that's great. And there are professionals who aren't going to disrupt the progress that you've made, but will be giving mm-hmm. you the legal advice just so you're making informed decisions.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense because of the complexity of financial assets and tax implications. I mean, it can get complicated, and legal advice is, I would think, financially wise to invest in.
Well, and it's both and, you know, talking to, you know, as lawyers, I always tell people they need to speak to someone like you mm-hmm. that, you know, I'm not giving tax and financial advice, but it's really important to think about, especially mm-hmm. if you're selling a home, what are the capital gains taxes, mm-hmm. you know, other assets that people don't think about, like, you know, so like the tax loss carry forwards that
yes.
might be something that's on a previously filed mm-hmm. joint return.
Yes.
Talking about how you're going to deal with those things. So those just aren't the kinds of things that are top of mind for most people who are just thinking about yep. the basics, the house, the bank accounts.
Right. Right.
They're not thinking about those other implications or how you might deal with different assets of different classes and things like that.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So what do you recommend people consider before they actually begin the filing process?
So what's interesting, and I think something that, you know, people, every state is different, but North Carolina, for example, you can't even file a complaint for divorce until you've been physically separated for a year. So you're not filing anything, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you wouldn't want to be speaking to an attorney or figuring out, and that you can't resolve the financial issues, custody issues, spousal support and child support issues. You can start working those out long before you can actually file the divorce complaint. And in fact, it's important to start doing that because there are certain claims that once your divorce is actually entered, you would not be able to file. So you want to start addressing those issues long before you're actually filing the true divorce complaint. And to resolve those issues, you might not ever have to file a lawsuit. Depending on how you resolve issues, you might decide to capture all of the terms that you've agreed upon in what we call a contract of separation and property settlement agreement, and whatever else is in that agreement, whether it's spousal support or child support or custody or what have you. Sometimes we will file a vanilla lawsuit just to capture things, even agreed upon terms just for child support and child custody. But every situation is different. And so it really may be that you don't have to file anything, but things to think about, you know, or just, you know, who is going to be on your team, you know, obviously attorneys. Do you need mental health professionals? Do you need financial advisors? Do you need child specialists? Do you need coaches to work with you on communication? And so just kind of figuring out what team you need to be put in place, I think is where you start having that conversation in terms of when you're meeting with your lawyer.
And you've put together a group of people that you like to recommend to your clients. Isn't that right? A curated group?
Yeah. So I've always loved connecting people. And I found that even before I started my own firm, that was happening organically. I would be like, you should go see Jen and Leslie, or you should go, you know, see this therapist, or and making those kinds of recommendations. And so I thought it would be really wonderful when I started my own firm to do something a little different and to have a curated community of helping professionals who were obviously there are wonderful professionals in Charlotte. We're so fortunate to have a wealth of really amazing professionals to help people going through divorce, but just also including some of the professions that you don't traditionally think of. Like you might want to consult with a mortgage broker to understand what kind of mortgage you're going to be able to afford if we think the settlement's going this way. Yeah. Or you might want to, you know, change something about your lifestyle or how you're taking care of yourself, and just all the little things that people might need when they're going through a divorce, and a community of helping professionals who I trust to take care of my clients when they're at their most vulnerable points.
I love that. Yeah. Should we just take a step back and talk about collaborative divorce?
Yeah.
And maybe just define it and explain.
Sure, absolutely. So the collaborative divorce process is really a process that is goal-oriented and primarily focused on interest-based negotiations. Both parties hire and have an independent, collaboratively trained attorney. So one of the misconceptions is that in a collaborative process, you're not going to be participating in negotiations, or that it's some kind of kumbaya hair braiding process, and that is not the case at all. Both parties have attorneys who are looking out and making sure that legally they are protected and all the issues that have to be addressed in any divorce are being addressed. But the difference is that it's a more it's focused more on present problem solving as opposed to historical finger pointing.
Yeah.
So present problem solving with a goal towards resolving these issues. And that's what we were talking about in terms of my website and looking forward to okay, we understand this has happened. And it's not a process where you're forgetting what was, mm-hmm. you know, in the background, but you've heard people say, I mean, if you're driving a car, you have a windshield and you have a rear view mirror. And you need both, right? It's not that they're not important, but if you have to pick one, you've got to be able to see out of the front and where you're going. And collaborative is really more focused on where are we going as a family? How can we take what is happening and what do we both need? What do our children need? How can we preserve family finances, emotional stability for our children, and be in a situation where we can focus on that and put them at the center and not in the middle, mm-hmm. you know? And so really trying to pull together a team that works on that with the clients. So you, in a series of private, confidential meetings and negotiations, working through and solving those problems that need to be solved and coming up with an agreement to resolve all the issues.
Well, when we look at equitable distribution and financial assets, as we sort of talk about those things, where do you recommend your clients get started? Like, should they start trying to make a list themselves, or how do you?
So one of the things that I do with my clients, and I don't think this is probably unique to my practice, is I start with sending them some homework of financial documents I would like them to start gathering. And it's okay if you're the spouse that doesn't have access to them. Obviously, we will figure that out depending on the process that we're in. But to start pulling together the documents that they do have, bank accounts, tax returns, investment retirement accounts, just things of that nature, so we can start getting an idea of what the financial landscape looks like. And then we work together with our clients to start building a chart of assets and debts.
And so how do you determine what's marital property and what's separate property? When does that get determined?
So marital property, the presumption, you know, everything is a presumption, and we're looking at, you know, in the state of North Carolina, at least, our statutes. In terms of marital property, the presumption is that anything that was accumulated during your marriage and before you all get separated is marital property, regardless of whose name it's in. So the idea is that what you are building, what you are accumulating during the marriage as a marital partnership, is marital assets. There are exceptions. Separate property, things that are gifts to you, specifically perhaps from a relative. Yep. Or inheritance. There's things that you can do, you know, unknowingly, of course, that you can convert separate assets into marital assets. So it's not as clear cut as that, but the presumption is if it was accumulated during the marriage and prior to the date of separation, it's marital property. If it's something that you came to the marriage with and preserved separately, or that you acquire after the date of separation based on post-date of separation activity, then that would be your separate property. And so that's, at a high level, that's what we're talking about. Well, we're talking about marital and separate.
Is the valuation of those items done at the date of separation? Or is it after that, at the time of divorce? When is it actually valued?
So the date of separation is certainly a line in the sand in terms of looking at the value of assets. But as you all know, things sitting in your retirement account, there's going to be the retirement account's the easiest, you know, asset to kind of give an example, a traditional 401k. You know, I have a value of my 401k as of the date of separation. And then perhaps we're not actually distributing or dividing that account until a year later. If I've continued to work and make contributions to that 401k, those contributions that I've made after the date of separation based on my continued work with my employer, those would be active contributions and not considered part of the marital estate. But the passive growth on the funds or the passive decrease, you know, depending on how our market
depending
is going,
the
passive increase or decrease on the funds that were in that account on the date of separation, we will look at that as what's called the divisible estate, but can get treated as a marital asset. So you are sharing in that passive increase and decrease. Also, like the value of your home. So we do use, you have to value the North Carolina, our statutes require you to value assets on the date of separation, but then you will also look at them closer in time at the date of distribution, depending on where you are in the process and how far in, how much time passes between the data set. It's very different if you're talking about data separation and you resolve your all of your issues in a couple months outside of the legal process, outside of the courtroom process, and you're doing that in a couple of months versus if you're in a litigation scenario where it could be going on for well over a year.
Yeah. Well, and we've got a list of things to be thinking about that we'll post so that our listeners can look at that if they need to as a starting point.
Great. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah.
So we hear a lot about why fair is not equal.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on that? What does that mean to you? I hear that a lot across those that are going through the process.
Sure. I mean, and fair is such a subjective term, right?
Exactly.
In the eye of the beholder. I mean, there is, when we're talking about equitable distribution, there is a presumption, again, in North Carolina that equitable means equal, but then there's a whole list of factors that the court can consider in not doing something 50-50 or equal. You know, when you're talking about length of marriage or what one spouse get, you know, someone right. who is a primary breadwinner, there's just a list of factors that can come into play and be considered where it's not always just chop, chop, 50-50. But, you know, equitable and equal and fair, I mean, it kind of goes back, it like goes back to us all being children, right? Like if they get a cookie, then I should get a cookie because that's fair. We should both get the same thing. And that's not always how it shakes out.
Yeah. Just switching gears a little bit. I know there are a lot of hidden costs with divorce, health insurance gaps, post-divorce filing of taxes, moving expenses, double rent. Do you factor those things in when negotiating a split of assets or a settlement? Or are those things that the client going through the divorce should consider and kind of spreadsheet and account for later on?
Well, and I think that that's where it's important to pull professionals in who are going to help you think about those issues. Because right now, if you're a dependent spouse on your spouse's insurance, that's quite a bit. You know, it's less expensive than if you're going to have to go out and get your own plan. So certainly when we're looking at budgets and support and having those kinds of conversations, we're looking at, okay, well, what will be the cost, or trying to get some estimates about what will be the cost for you to go get your own health insurance if that spouse isn't going to, you know, be in a situation where they're going to have a job where health insurance benefits are included. Definitely looking at all of those issues, or in terms of, well, who is going to claim the dependency exemption for XYZ, whether it's a mortgage interest deduction or the children. And having those kinds of conversations certainly can shape how other components get resolved.
That helps. And maybe we should just qualify, what is equitable distribution for the listeners, for those who aren't familiar with that term?
Sure.
And then further, maintenance versus alimony versus support. So those are all terms we hear, but there's clearly differences in what that means in the settlement.
Sure. So equitable distribution, I always laugh thinking about my best friend when I was in law school and she was not, and she was just like, lawyers just put fancy words on things. So the rest of us don't know what we're talking about. But anyway, but equitable distribution is really just a fancy term for property division and figuring out how to look at the marital estate and what has been accumulated during the marriage and where it gets distributed. So that's equitable distribution.
Okay.
It's really property division or distribution.
Okay. Versus maintenance, alimony, and support are
right. So maintenance, alimony, and support are they're all different words for the same. So spousal support in North Carolina, you have post separation support, which is a temporary form of spousal support, And then you have alimony, which is the longer term, not the temporary Band-Aid form of spousal support. Maintenance can be another term that gets used in other jurisdictions to talk about support for a spouse, a dependent spouse. And you know, the things that we look at, you have a dependent and a supporting spouse under our North Carolina language. And, you know, there you look at what are reasonable needs and expenses, what was the accustomed standard of living during the marriage, is one's spouse, quote unquote, dependent on the other in terms of can they maintain their accustomed standard of living and meet their reasonable needs expenses without help from the other spouse. And so we put together, you know, historical budgets to look at what was family spending, what was individual spending, what do you need, you know, in terms of meeting your monthly needs and expenses, and do you have the ability to meet all of those financial needs on your own with your own income, or do you need, is there a gap that needs to be filled with support from another spouse?
So those are kind of income generating type of needs, as opposed to the equitable distribution, which is really focused on sort of fixed assets, if you will, or things that had already been invested in.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, in terms of asset distribution versus, right, what are your income versus sources
income.
And the income available to both spouses for purposes of meeting those ongoing expenses. Yep. Yes.
Well, as we wrap up our first part of this series, is there anything else you'd like to leave with our listeners? We're going to put some materials on your website and our website.
Yes.
We have an asset inventory worksheet, and I know you have some materials that are helpful as people consider or embark on the process. Any last words of advice or wisdom that you would share today?
I mean, I think in terms of, you know, going on and really like the first step in the process, I do think is giving some consideration to what kind of process you want to have, what you would like your divorce to look like. And a lot of people will start going down the path of my spouse will never agree to this. They're so difficult. We could never resolve things outside of court, and thinking that court's the only available option. You wouldn't be alone in that situation. Most people think that there's a lot of controversy and emotion, or you probably otherwise wouldn't be getting divorced, right? But many, many people are able to resolve their conflict outside of a divorce, outside of a traditional litigation setting. Okay. And so thinking about what process you want, going and meeting with an attorney and asking the questions, asking them to explain to you the processes that are available. Because in that initial consultation, they'll be able to go into a more in-depth conversation than we just had about how the different processes look. Is that process going to be a good fit for you based on what you're sharing about your situation and your kids or your spouse or what have you? And just really trying to think about what is the legacy that you want to live and what you want your life to look like as you move through this process and into the next chapter, and seeing if you can find professionals who will work with you to help you achieve it.
Great. Thank you. Perfect, Claire. Thanks. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Claire.
And we look forward to part two
okay,
of
thank
this
you.
Series.
I'm looking forward to it too.
Thank you. Great.